हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके श्री चैतन्य चरितमृत मध्य लीला चैप्टर 22 द प्रोसेस ऑफ डिवोशनल सर्विस। So, page 42. So, Anganam pancha kasyasya purva vi vili kitasya cha nikila sraischya bodhaya punar apyatra samshanam. The glorification of these five items, association with devotees, chanting the holy name, and so on, is to make known the complete superiority of these five practices of devotional service. The 64 items of devotional service include all the activities of the body, mind, and senses. Thus, the 64 items engage one in devotional service in all respects. So they've been designed by the Lord and given to us by the Acharyas so the body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service. That's the whole idea. We're trying to come to that platform. And then coming to that platform, then one is in that perfectional stage. So the glorification of these five items is brought out because these stand out amongst all of them. Like you see, you start with the association with devotees. And so then with that, you're hearing Bhagavatam, you're associating with them in all these different aspects. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out that the nine items of devotional service, though these are for everyone. Everyone can be involved. Everyone can choose one or a group. But we see as someone's more advanced, then generally these five stand out the most in their life. Like that, they'll be most focused on these. And the other aspects, means the other four, will be assisting these. 222, 130 to 131. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. With love and faith, one should worship the lotus feet of the deity. One should taste the meaning of Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of pure devotees. And one should associate with the devotees who are more advanced than oneself and who are endowed with a similar type of affection for the Lord. Footnote 50, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1290-91. Srila Prabhupada. The words swajati yasyae Snigdhe sadhu sangas svato vare are very important. One should not associate with professional Bhagavatam reciters. A professional Bhagavatam reciter is one who is not in the disciplic succession, or one who has no taste for bhakti yoga. Simply on the strength of grammatical knowledge and word juggling, professional reciters maintain their bodies and their desires for sense gratification by reading Srimad Bhagavatam. One should also avoid those who are averse to Lord Vishnu and his devotees, those who are Mayavadis, those who offend the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, those who simply dress as Vaishnavas or so-called Goswamis, and those who make a business of selling Vedic mantras and reciting Bhagavatam to maintain their families. Right? So all of these might seem that they're a nice association in the way of that they may be following the Vedic principles nicely, they may be absorbed, you know, in things connected with the Bhagavatam, but their actual motives for all these are not in line with pure devotional service because they're not connected properly to the parampara. They're not seeking that advanced association. So they're not actually following what is recommended. According to the Vedic injunctions, yasya devi para bhaktihi, the Srimad Bhagavatam can be recited only by one who has unflinching faith in the lotus feet of Krishna and his devotee, the spiritual master. One should try to understand Srimad Bhagavatam from the spiritual master. The Vedic injunction states, Bhaktya Bhagavatam Grahyam Nabhudya Nacha Tikkaya. One has to understand Srimad Bhagavatam through the process of devotional service and by hearing the recitation of a pure devotee. These are the injunctions of the Vedic literature, Shruti and Smriti. Those who are not in the disciplic succession and who are not pure devotees cannot understand the real mysteries, real mysterious objective of Srimad Bhagavatam and Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Right? So therefore, then they will come up with their own approaches, they'll write their own commentaries, they'll do all these things that are not necessary. And so one has to be very, very careful about that, because it's about, because even if you're in the disciplic succession, but you're not associating with pure devotees, you're not trying to become a pure devotee, that's not your goal, then one will not really understand the deep meanings. So of course, one will be, if one's in the disciplic succession, one will be advancing, but as one advances and gets purified, then these things will become understood. Right? Udriti, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Chapter 12. Srila Rupa Goswami has recommended that one live in the association of those who are of the same mentality. Therefore, it is necessary to form some association for Krishna consciousness and live together for the cultivation of knowledge of Krishna and devotional service. The most important item for living in that association is the mutual understanding of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. When faith and devotion are developed, they become transformed into the worship of the deity, chanting of the holy name, and living in a holy place like Mathura and Vrindavan. Right? So by association with the devotees, serving the devotees and hearing Bhagavatam, that faith then develops into then the other aspects of worshiping the deity, chanting the holy name, and living in a place like Mathura and Vrindavan. So we see is that it starts with that proper association with devotees, and that association means hearing about the transcendental glories of the Lord. So that principle is very important. And Swajati will hear in this case will mean that those who are interested in pure devotional service. So that's why we see, as Prabhupada has mentioned, that's why there's a society, right? So the society is there so that the devotees could come together and have that association. That's the purpose of the society. It's not something else. It's not about prestige or anything else. It's about creating an environment in which all devotees can come together and take advantage of the association, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, worshiping the deity, chanting the holy name, and living in a holy place. That's the idea. Yes? Good? No? 222, 132. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. One should congregationally chant the holy name of the Lord and reside in Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada. This verse is found in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.92. Yeah, that's just following the previous one. And that was Lord Chaitanya. He said before, Rupa Goswami then documented that in the Nectar Devotion. So that's, you know, been written here in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Same verse has been written into the verses into the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung, Sri Gaura Mandala Bhumi Jeva Jani Chintamani Tara Hai Braja Bhumi Vas. One who understands the transcendental nature of Navadvip and its surrounding area, where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu enacted his pastimes, resides always in Vrindavan. Similarly, living in Jagannath Puri is as good as living in Vrindavan. The conclusion is that Navadvip Dham, Jagannath Puri Dham, and Vrindavan Dham are identical, right? Same place, just different flavors that are being tasted, but otherwise they're the same place. However, if one goes to Mathura Mandala Bhumi for sense gratification or to make a livelihood, he commits an offense and is condemned. Whoever does so must be penalized in the next life by becoming a hog or monkey in Vrindavan Dham. After taking on such a body, the offender is liberated in the next life. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur remarks that residing in Vrindavan with a view to enjoy sense gratification surely leads the so-called devotee to a lower species. Right? So here is that you're not talking about in the material platform where someone does activities that are such that the life that they should get is that of a dog, because then they'll go through, they have their particular punishment, this and that. They'll end up as a dog for so many lifetimes, and this way then move up until they get back to human life here, and they're, you know, within the material environment. But in the Dham, then here is that those who are not behaving themselves and that, then they may take birth as the various animals in the Dham. But then by living that life in the Dham, they'll become purified, and then next life they'll be freed from that position. They'll come to the spiritual platform, and so then they can continue on nicely with the devotion without the distractions of the previous a material desire. But the point is, you know, one absorbs himself nicely in Krishna consciousness, one avoids all that. So here we see is that one can get distracted by that. One doesn't come to the Dham because by being there, one can make money in that. That doesn't mean that someone's living in the Dham is not doing something for a livelihood that maintains themselves and their family. It just means that that's not the reason for living in the Dham. They're living in the Dham because of the association, you know, the kirtan, hearing Bhagavatam, worshiping the deity, you know, and being in the Dham by the transcendental position. That's there. And then with that access, then you also have to take care of oneself. But there are those who specifically live in these places because then religious people go there. They can do their particular activities of Bhagavatam recitation or whatever they're doing. And in this way, then they can maintain themselves very nicely. So they're the ones that end up in these kind of positions. So one has to be, you know, so the point is one's serious about one's association. Lifestyle in the Dham. 222, 133, 134. Maharaj. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes. Yeah. Every time you come on, your picture seems to get thinner and thinner. You're on some kind of like diet or something, so therefore you're.
No, not so I can make bigger, no? No. Okay, maybe like that, no? More bigger, no?
No. Everyone else's goes full screen, but yours stays thin. Is something special or something? Huh?
Yes. Yeah.
You figured it looked better as that, you know, so it has that aesthetic look, and so that it matches.
Okay, yes, I'm slim.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Maharaj, when we live in the Dham, myself, I realize that the main difficulty is to stay focused on the idea to go to the pure bhakti.
Yes, but it's anywhere we will have that problem. So it's not just the Dham. The point is in the Dham, you're making that endeavor, it will move forward 1,000 times quicker than anywhere else.
Yes.
Right? So that's the thing is that wherever you are, you know, it means that you're, let's say one's home anywhere in the world, you know, you have, you know, you're doing some kind of worship of the Lord, you're, you know, cooking, offering prasad, doing kirtan, associating, then that place becomes special. Or the temple, the deities are in the worship, and one is visiting there or living there, then it's non-different from Vrindavan. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, is there's something special about the Dham. Mm-hmm. Right, so there's still going to be that specialness. So one should understand they're non-different, but at the same time as Vrindavan, Mayapur, and Puri are special.
Yes, mm-hmm.
Like that. And so therefore, then one, you know, seeing that you have that opportunity, things can go quicker. You try to put more attention in that into it. Mm-hmm. You know, just like does that make sense?
Because it seems, Maharaj, that when we this chapter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is very much focused on the idea to have the right intent to go to pure.
Yes.
And right
intent is always good. It means you don't want a left intent; you want right intent.
Yes. So it's like. And when the intensity is not there, it's very easy to go back. I can say to normal, to material life, to guna. You know?
Yes.
So, What is your? I know that it is recommended to be associated with devotees who are more advanced. Means they are more
Right.
intense in their
Yes, yes.
consciousness.
Yes.
Can we say that? How can we develop the desire to become more focused on pure bhakti?
By associating with devotees who are more advanced.
Yes.
And so one may ask, how do you get the desire to associate with those who are more advanced? By associating with those who are more advanced.
Yes, it's the only one way. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, if one has that sincere desire and mood, one feels maybe one doesn't have the qualifications or have that drive. But if that mood is there, then Krishna will be pleased, and somehow or another, things will move forward. Because we always have to remember, Krishna's in the heart, and he sees the intent. Because we may think, oh, people can't understand, or who will know? Oh, you can't judge. How can you say he's not this and that? Why do you say he's, you know, his sincere? Well, how can you say, you know? But the point is, Krishna's sitting in the heart. So even if we don't know, Krishna knows. And so the principle, that's the principle. Because if someone is sincere, they will move forward. If they're not sincere, then they can take advantage of you know, being made aware and try to take things more seriously. Right? So therefore, because Krishna's in the heart, then you pray to him and like that. You take advantage, you know, worship the deity, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, chanting, you know, take advantage of, appreciate the Dham. Right? So that service in the Dham is then by appreciating the beauty of the Dham, glorifying the Dham, cleaning the Dham, beautifying the Dham. These are ways in which one can render service.
Yes, yes.
Is that okay?
Yes, Maharaj, yes. Okay. I am in contact with devotees who are living outside Mayapur in different parts of the world. And they always say that it's difficult to make progress without association with advanced devotees. And more mm-hmm. or less, the only way for many of them is through Srila Prabhupada books, you know?
Yeah, maybe so that'll work. That's nice. But the point is, unless they're living out in the middle of nowhere, but, you know, yes. There is places they could contact other devotees, try to create yes. some sangha. That's also an avenue, is that because it's, you know, it's, the point is those who are like-minded and all that, who are interested in becoming very serious, then you contact others, try to get together, try to have some association. Because there are so many devotees all over the place that, you know, one can try to do such things and it may be advantageous, especially if one's in, you know, the big cities, because there, you know, there's hundreds of devotees around the various parts of the cities, you know, so one can surely find those who are close by that's easy enough to get together and do those things. So there's always, so like you said, reading Prabhupada's books, then there's, if you can, try to get together with devotees whenever there's programs and that, try to attend those at the temples, festivals, you know, that things like that. And nowadays, you know, you have all this kind of online things, so that way you can also take advantage of various different programs going on all over the world. So if one wants to have that association, then you make that endeavor, then Krishna is kind.
We can say that when there is a will, there is a way.
Yes, yes. When there's a will, there's a way. Mm-hmm. You know. So the point is it's about us making an endeavor.
Yes.
Because we exist, right? But the point is, you know, and things around us exist, but that doesn't change anything. It's when we do something with our existence in what's existing around us
yes.
that things yes. start to happen.
Yes, yes.
Right? That's then what we have to try yes. to do.
Yes, yes.
Yes. Does that make sense? Yes. It's not that, oh, everybody else should do this, and why aren't the devotees doing this, and I would be so inspired and all that. Yeah, you've heard, do something yourself.
Yes, yes.
You know, like that. And then Krishna will help.
Yes. Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. Is that good?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Maharaj. Yes.
Okay. 222, 133 to 134. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "The power of these five principles is very wonderful and difficult to understand. Even without faith in them, a person who is offenseless can awaken his dormant love of Krishna simply by being a little connected with them." Footnote 51. This is a verse found also in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 1.2.238. Right, so you see, these are so glorified, these aspects, that even if one doesn't have that faith, right, that he doesn't know about them, he's just doing them, but without offenses. Just like we see Ajamil, he chanted without offense. What a nice effect he's getting. So in the same way, as if we are engaged in these kind of things, but without offense, then how much benefit there'll be, right? You know, like you see, people come to Mayapur, they don't really know what's going on. They just heard it's a place or something big's going on, or, you know, like this. And so they come, they see the deity, they take prasad, they walk around the dham, you know, they do, you know, they hear the kirtan. And so many different aspects are going on. They may take books with them. And so they can make so much advancement just by these simple things. So that's the uniqueness of the dham, is that in that environment, one can deal in that way. One can get the benefit in that way. So what is being pointed out is that, oh, you don't need faith. No, it's pointing out the glory of these five. If even without faith, but not committing offenses, one is able to get so much benefit, then what if you have faith? You know, it's like what Narad Muni is talking about. There's that one line of verses in which he's talking about, you know, how any way you connect yourself to the Lord, you get benefit. So he's talking about, you know, Shishupal, then, you know, he got liberated like this, and Hiranyakashipu and Kamsa and Putana, and, you know, anybody like that. And so, but he's not recommending that as a process. He's just saying that connecting to the Lord is the essential point. So if connecting to the Lord, even in an unfavorable way, one is making so much benefit, let alone what's happening with those who approach with affection, like Mother Jashoda or the residents of Vrindavan or the gopis, who have so much surrender. So that's the point to take, is that therefore you try to surrender to Krishna and try to serve Krishna very nicely, and then everything goes well. But so that's the point. We're trying to make a sincere effort. How good we are at that effort, how effective we are in our effort, that's you know, that's between yourself and Krishna. But the point is it's not that, oh, you know, this hasn't happened, that hasn't happened, this one got this benefit, that one got that, this one, and so I'm not advancing. No, it's not about that. It's about the transformation of consciousness, the purification of consciousness. So in other words, you're removing the layers of contamination that reveal the natural position of the soul to serve Krishna. So the advantage of the purification is that it brings you closer to Krishna. But why you're getting purified is because you're trying to get closer to Krishna. Otherwise, purification on its own, you know, you can do that forever and you're still not going to, you know, get prema. But trying to pursue pure devotional service, even if we're not so good at it, the heart becomes purified, and then we become closer to Krishna. Then we become good at it. So that's the, as you mentioned in the beginning, if that intent is there, that sincerity is there, then all these things will develop much more nicely. Is that? Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay. When one is firmly fixed in devotional service, whether he executes one or many processes of devotional service, the ways of love of Godhead will awaken. Udriti, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, Chapter 12. The last five items are very important and essential. If one can simply discharge these five items, he can be elevated to the highest perfectional stage. Even if he does not execute them perfectly, one may be able to perform one item or many items according to one's capacity. But it is the principal factor of complete attachment to devotional service that makes one advance on the path. Right? So that attachment to devotional service, this is the process. This is where the benefit is. There is no benefit in anything else. It doesn't mean you're not doing your duties or not taking care of, ordinary activities, duties and that. But it's that the only thing that's going to have any real lasting effect is going to be devotional service. And only through devotional service does everything else become perfect. Whatever one may have an affinity for, if that is connected to Krishna and using Krishna's service, that's the only real benefit and use of the thing. Otherwise, on its own, they just keep coming and going. It's like foam on the waves. You see, the waves are coming in and all that foam is there, and then the wave goes back and the foam just disappears. You can see when the wave hits, there's so much foam there. But as it continues, it just disappears. So it was a big event. Why is the foam happening? It's a big event. The waves are hitting. There's all these things and, all that. But it still just disappears. So that's why we can't put our faith that anything on the material platform will actually be of any lasting benefit. Only devotional service, that gives lasting benefit. And since we as the soul tend to last a little longer than our material situations, then we should put the emphasis on that, on trying to appreciate that lasting benefits that we can get from devotional service. So, yeah. 222, 135 to 140. There are many devotees who execute only one of the nine processes of devotional service. Nonetheless, they get ultimate success. Devotees like Maharaj Ambarisha execute all nine items, and they also get ultimate success because the point is they're connected with Krishna. It's not that, I'm connected more with Krishna, because the point is Krishna being unlimited, we're only going to connect with certain particular aspects anyway. Because let's say we're serving Krishna in Vrindavan, we're connecting there, we're not connecting him where he is in Dwarka or in Vaikuntha. But the point is Krishna being unlimited, every aspect is full in itself. He being unlimited, his Vrindavan pastimes are unlimited. Then you can say, there's five rasas, you may say, but one rasa is unlimited. Within that rasa, then the one devotee's, following Srimati Radharani's love for Krishna, that's unlimited. So that's the beauty of it. If you're following one or following many, it doesn't matter. It's whatever is your capacity, whatever keeps you fully engaged. As we said before, means that Srila Prabhupada made the point that the body, mind, and words are what's being engaged here. I think that's he's quoting from Srila Rupa Goswami, saying, yeah. Thus, 64 items engage one in devotional service in all respects, right? Activities of body, mind, words. So we have showing the 64, showing the first 10, are things to do, and that will situate you in devotional service. The second 10 will make sure everything goes nicely by avoiding things, make one steady by not doing things that are going to distract you from it. Then after that, then the next... Is it 30 items? Yes. So then they are various ways to engage yourself in devotional service. And so then like this, the items are coming up, and then Lord Chaitanya then finalizes that with this point of these four items. So the 60 items and then these four. And we see is that these five items have been explained already before. So in this, when he's speaking to Sanatana Goswami, he opens on the 30 with the nine items in devotional service. Then he later shows about these five. Then again, he mentions these five. Right? So he's emphasizing how important this is to be properly engaged. Okay, so then here is a quote. Maharaj Parikshit attained the highest perfection, shelter at Lord Krishna's lotus feet, simply by hearing about Lord Vishnu. Sukadeva Goswami attained perfection simply by reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Prahlad Maharaj attained perfection by remembering the Lord. The goddess of fortune attained perfection by massaging the transcendental legs of Mahavishnu. Maharaj Prithu attained perfection by worshiping the deity. And Akura attained perfection by offering prayers unto the Lord. Vajrangaji, Hanuman. That's far out. Vajrangaji. Hanuman attained perfection by rendering service to Lord Ramachandra. Arjuna attained perfection simply by being Krishna's friend. Bali Maharaj attained perfection by dedicating everything to the lotus feet of Krishna. Footnote 52. This verse appears in the Padyavali 53 and the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 12265. I think Padyavali is also Rupa Goswami's book of prayers. Right? So we see is that these ones are so important that it's spoken by Lord Chaitanya, that's been documented by Krishnadas Goswami, and that's because it's in somebody's Kadacha, and like this, they've talked about it. Then Rupa Goswami has put it in two of his books. So we see these essential points that they will be, you know, these central aspects that then further development, further finer points are all connected back to. So that's why many times when we're, because of the descending aspect, Prabhupada will say, this is chant Hare Krishna, right? And so, but that includes all the things that go along with chanting. Because you're talking about the principle. So that's the point. In the Vedic, the fundaments are up. While in the modern, in the inductive, the fundaments are down. So then, yeah, you have the fundament, then you build up on it. But so they forget about the fundaments. But in the Vedic, the fundaments are up. So therefore, as you, the more you go into the detail, the more you see is that that simple sentence is actually the conclusion. You know, it's just like you see, the more we study Jiva Goswami's the Sandarbhas, then the more we see is that these simple sentences that are said by the Acharyas and by Srila Prabhupada, they're actually the essence on which all these technical details are simply explaining. Right? So it's, yeah. So it's not about saying something new. It's about having a deeper understanding about what's there, because the Krishna is ever fresh. His teachings are ever fresh. So it's not that you have to say something completely that no one's ever heard of to therefore be of interest. It's a matter of your understanding, you know, practice and realization that makes it, you know, inspiring. Maharaj Ambarisha, always engaged by dedicating everything to the... Ambarisha always engaged his mind at the lotus feet of Krishna. His words in describing the spiritual world and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his hands in cleansing and washing the Lord's temple, his ears in hearing topics about the Supreme Lord, his eyes in seeing the deity of Lord Krishna in the temple, his body in embracing the Vaishnavas or touching the lotus feet, his nostrils in smelling the aroma of the tulsi leaves offered to Krishna's lotus feet, his tongue in tasting food offered to Krishna, his legs in going to places of pilgrimage like Vrindavan and Mathura, or to the Lord's temple, his head in touching the lotus feet of the Lord and offering him obeisances, and his desires in serving the Lord faithfully. In this way, Maharaj Ambarish engaged his senses in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. As a result, he awakened his dormant loving propensity for the Lord's service. 53. This verse is from Srimad Bhagavatam 9:4, 18-20, and is spoken by Srila Sukadeva Goswami. So it's showing that how each devotee became perfect in one aspect, and Ambarish, how he became perfect in all the aspects, and how he engaged, you know, how he was doing. So uses his eyes and seeing the temple. So body, mind, and words, everything is engaged in the Lord's service. So that's an important aspect. So as we were saying, yeah. So to be able to appreciate that in this and in these combinations, that's what's being engaged. You know, so you're going to the temple, the body's being engaged, you're doing circumambulating, you're dancing, you're offering obeisances. But at the same time, as you're remembering the Lord, you're offering prayers, you're hearing about Krishna. So this way, the different aspects within our life are being engaged in the Lord's service. And so then it becomes very, you know, full. The idea is that one is then fully engaged. Very nicely, one becomes fully engaged. If a person gives up all material desires and completely engages in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, as enjoined in the revealed scriptures, he is never indebted to the demigods, sages, or forefathers. Right? So now we're getting into this point, is that since he's fully engaged there, we have prescribed duties. Right? These duties, we have obligation. So now, the point is if you're engaged nicely in the Lord's service, you don't have another obligation other than serving the Lord. There is no other engagement. So that becomes the perfect aspect, is that engagement is enough. While those who are in karma and gyan, they have so many obligations to take care of. So that's why for us, and so as enjoined, also he's completely engaged in the transcendental loving service. As enjoined in the revealed scriptures, he doesn't make up his own process. The acharyas give, they tell how it works, they give explanations, they give definitions. And then therefore we follow that. We don't make up our own. We make up our own, we get deviated. Like that. So we don't make up our own process. It has to be based on what the revealed scriptures are saying. Srila Prabhupada. After birth, every man is indebted in so many ways. He is indebted to the demigods for their supplying necessities like air, light, and water. When one takes advantage of the Vedic literatures, one becomes indebted to great sages like Vyasa, Narad, Devala, and Sita. Right? So demigods supply air, light, water, and that. Then Vedic literatures, then to the great sages. Takes birth in a particular family, he becomes indebted to the forefathers, right? You're born in a particular family, so you got a body, you have the facilities of that family, you know, whatever that may be. We are even indebted to common living entities like cows from whom we take milk. Because we accept service from so many animals, we become indebted. However, if one is completely engaged in the Lord's devotional service, he is absolved of all debts. This is confirmed in the following verse, quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.41. Verse 222, 141, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, one who has given up all material duties and taken full shelter at the lotus feet of Mukunda, who gives shelter to all, is not indebted to the demigods, great sages, ordinary living beings, relatives, friends, mankind, or even his forefathers who have passed away. Srila Prabhupada, it is said, Adya Pannam Brahma Yagyaf Pitrir Yagyastu Tarpanam Hamo Daivo Balir Bhauto Nriyajo, Nriyagyo Titi Pujanam. By offering oblations with ghee, one satisfies the demigods. By studying the Vedas, one performs Brahma Yagya, which satisfies the great sages. Offering libations of water before one's forefathers called Pitri Yagya. By offering tribute, one performs Bhuta Yagya. By properly receiving guests, one performs Nri Yagya. These are the five yagyas that liquidate the five kinds of indebtedness. Okay, indebtedness to the demigods, great sages, forefathers, living entities, and common men. Therefore, one has to perform these five kinds of yagyas. But when one takes to the Sankirtan yagya, the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, one does not have to perform any other yagya. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Narad Muni made a statement about the systematic performance of Bhagavad Dharma in connection with statements previously made by the Navi Yogendras before Narad Maharaj Nimi. The sage Karabhajana Rishi explained the four incarnations, the four yugas, And at the end, in his in this verse 141, he explained the position of Krishna's pure devotee, how he's absolved of all debts, right? So the whole point is that every means we're seeing how if everything is connected to Krishna, it's all expansion, it's all his energy, so it's non-different from him. Therefore, all the variety of aspects that are there, because if we're more conscious of the material energy of the body, you know, the social and all these different aspects, then, you know, in Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, then we're going to be aware of those activities that are giving us advantage. And so that means you're going to have to, the demigods, the sages, you know, the forefathers, the general living entities, and forefather living entities and common men, is that, you know, you have to take care of this. You know, just like you're indebted to the, you know, the guy who brings your Amazon packages, you know, like that. So like this, there's all these different things are automatically there. And so why? Because, and all the potencies for all this to work is still coming from Krishna. Krishna's in the form of all these. But the point is now if you're directly worshiping Krishna, the origin of all these energies, then you don't have to separately worship these energies without him. Right? So we see is that for the devotees, they don't need to do these aspects. It's only what has been recommended, as Lord Chaitanya mentioned before, is that, if a person gives up all material desires and completely engages in the transcendental loving service of Krishna, as enjoined in the revealed scriptures, right? And it's mentioned you revealed scriptures you're getting from the guru, right? He is never indebted to demigods, sages, or that, because the point of all this is you have to respect. Why? Because ultimately Krishna is the one to respect. You have an attachment somewhere, but there's something in that attachment you have to respect. You have to deal with that attachment in such a way that it is favorable for moving closer to Krishna. Right? That's what piety is for. It's for that things that are bringing you closer to Krishna. But you don't know that that's what's going on because there's one path, right? The path is there. Krishna's at one end and hell is at the other. And so therefore, then you're going to those activities that are dealing with Krishna's energies appropriately, then that moves you towards Krishna. You're dealing appropriately according to Shastra, you know, Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, according to authority. It moves even more nicely forward. You know, just by haphazard, you happen to do something, it's still a move you a little bit forward. But if you don't properly respect Krishna's energies in that, then it will take you away, like, from Krishna. And so one has to be very, very careful about that. Is that that's the whole point, is that what's going on. So if you're already worshiping Krishna, then these secondary indirect aspects of trying to bring you closer to Krishna aren't important because you're already doing the direct. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say you're coming to visit some big guy, right? And so you go and outside the door, there's the secretary there at their desk. And so you're going to them and they're telling you, okay, fill out this paper and this and that. But let's say the big man comes to the door, right? So then when you approach, I mean, then you don't have to finish all those papers. And you can't say, oh, yeah, well, excuse me, 1 minute, I got to finish all these papers and do all these different things. Sit down over there until they call me and then I can come and see you. No. The point is those are the processes to bring you closer. But then there's the direct process, which is devotional service. Right? That's the whole point, is because then you're approaching Krishna as a friend. That's quicker. But if you're approaching him as, social status or economics or justice or dharma for, you know, sense gratification, elevation to heavenly planets or for liberation, then yes, you have to see the secretary and go through all the procedures. But if you're approaching Krishna in devotion, you know that he's the Lord. He's the supreme friend, right? He's the proprietor of everything. Everything's there. Then it's a direct method. Then by knowing the devotees, that takes you through. You know, that's what we're talking about. Because otherwise, you know, oh, so we don't have to do anything. So that means, oh, we don't have to respect anyone or follow any duties. No, it means you're fully absorbed in Krishna. And so therefore, naturally, you're already doing the purpose of those duties. But this idea, oh, I don't have to do this. If you're doing some service, yes, you don't have to. But just sitting there saying, I don't have to do this, and taking pleasure in that, I'm a devotee, I don't have to do that. That's not necessarily as strong a position of service as one would like to think it is. Right? If it's in faith in Krishna, oh, we don't have to do it because we're absorbed in Krishna. That's another thing. But generally, it's a loophole. Oh, yes, we chant. We don't have to follow all the rules. So then what are you going to follow? Right? If you think about it, those who like to break down the rules, then the problem is they don't know what the rules are for. So as soon as you get rid of everything, how do you interact with anybody? Right? You know, like in the modern scenario now, people are moving forward that, you know, you can't, there's no gender things. There's no, everything disappears. Everything goes out the window. And there's no norms, there's no standards. And then you have to deal with, and then norm, because I have to deal with everybody according to how they see they are, you know, like that they're, you know, a middle-aged, you know, the guy's, you know, however, you know, 20 years old, but he thinks he's a middle-aged hippopotamus that's actually a you know, the female son of, gay quail parents, you know, on Sunday afternoon between 2 and 4. And so therefore you have to call him, you know, his large fishness, you know, like that. And so where is the basis of relationship? There's none. Other than I have to deal with what you say because you're the center of the universe, so you don't get offended. And by doing that, I'm doing a great social position. But then, you know, but then what about me and someone else? Then, you know, then it's just a fight over who's the center, who has the right to get offended. And so the basis is it's just motive ignorance, because it's just about false ego and becoming angry. You know, there's no goodness, there's not even any passion, they're not even accomplishing anything. You know, what's been accomplished? Okay, yes, you have on that nice pink dress, you know, even though it's a little annoying because it's a little bit low cut and all that chest hair is hanging out and all that. And you didn't, you know, properly shave. So it looks a little stupid with that bow in your hair. But at the same time, as you know, you're buff from it, the thing like that. And you're wearing your, you know, what do you call it? You know, your army boots and everything else like that, walking around with, you know, other, you know, band stuff. So, you know, you're doing what you want to do and all that. But how are you supposed to interact, you know, just other than go, wow, nice dress, you know? You know, so it really reduces how they can actually be even engaged in Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. So that all reduces because they throw out everything. They look for every loophole and everything and how to bring it all to what I want to do. In other words, loopholes are how I can get what I want without having to go through the rules. So basically, I don't want to do the rules. I just want to do it my way. Right? But we have to remember is Sinatra's dead. Right? He can say whatever he did, but you know, what he wants, but the modes of nature did it their way, not his way. You know, so that's the problem. Then you have the other side where it's just about the rules and the regulation. If you don't follow the rules and this and that, nothing's happening. You get no benefit. No, like this, everything's finished. But the point is the rule is just so you interact. Right. So that's the point. The rule is there to interact. The one, it's just about the rule. The other is just, oh, we don't need rules to interact. But without rules, how do you interact? You know, we say, oh, we don't want any tradition. Oh, that's all fat. We do it this way. But then they're making new rules and they've changed according to whim. So Therefore, one can't have the personal relationships because they think the rules. The other can't have personal relationships because they think it's all about themselves, you know, or their values. And they can't accommodate and work within the context of other people having different values and all that. You know, it's not like, oh, you know, here's another human being, let me interact. But it's no, unless they're a human being the way I say they're a human being, then you know, I don't interact. So we have to be very, very careful here is that to know that all these different rules and regulations that the scriptures are giving are to engage people in a progress towards Krishna, not away, because going away has no value. Going towards, its value is that within that they may meet a pure devotee, and therefore then their advancement can go on nicely. That's the whole advantage, because those who are sinful generally don't have an idea to perform, to associate with devotees and all those things, right? So one has to, that's the whole point of it. So if one's engaged in pure devotional service, that full engagement, that itself is all that is necessary, because that's the purpose of all the rules and regulations of the scriptures, right? But those things that are recommended for us that we do, that is the medium through which we have our culture and which we interact with each other. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So yeah. So that was, yeah, like that. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, although the pure devotee does not follow all the regulative principles of Varnashram, he worships the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, he naturally has no tendency to commit sin, right? The Varnashram is going to regulate his life, so it's always progressive. He won't commit any sin. And that sin means doing something that's opposed to what's appropriate. So he's not going to do an activity that's not appropriate, inappropriate. He's not going to interact with people that are inappropriate, right? If he's respecting everybody and not looking for respect, how can he not interact properly? He'll always interact properly, right? He's always humble. He's always tolerant. How can he not deal properly with everybody? He'll always do. So that's the point. He's always that therefore, the pure devotee, he doesn't follow all the regulative principles. Just whatever is recommended for us, that we follow, you know, what works best and all this. But the thing, oh, we don't have to follow. It's like, who said we don't have to follow? Like that means the point, he does not follow all the regular principles. What's given to us by the guru, why wouldn't we want to follow them? What's given by Lord Chaitanya and the 64 items, that's not regulations. You know, it's not coming from Varnashram. But the point is within that, those activities, then so many of those things are going to be regulated within our life. So those things of the Bhagavad is going to be, that's going to be the drive. You want to please the Lord, but it's going to be in the framework of Pancharatra. Like you see, so many of the items are connected with deity worship and those kind of aspects. It also mentions in there that in the first 10 about your livelihood. So that means the Vedic is already included in as basic. It has a framework of the Pancharatra, but its mood and drive and intent is the Bhagavad. So that's what makes it unique and special. It's to say, oh, we don't need Varnashram. It's kind of like, who's we? And to quote from, I say, what is it? Lone Ranger, Tonto, the American Indian who was the sidekick of the Lone Ranger. Then at one point I'm not sure if this is very important. Okay. Srila Prabhupada, the Varnashram institution is planned in such a way that one will not commit sinful activities, right? The Varnashram is made like that. Material existence continues due to sinful activity, right? You're in the material world because of sinful activity. Like you see, if you perfectly follow Varnashram for 100 lifetimes, you go back to Vaikuntha. like that. Because within Varnashram, as we see, is that you have to worship the deities, you have to, you know, all these different things are there. Respect Brahmins, do all these different things like that. And basically it means, other than the devotees, who's going to be able to do that? When one acts sinfully in this life, he gets a suitable body for the next life. But it means whatever is the particular direction of sin that you are interested in, that's the kind of body you get. You know, it probably gives the example. You eat, you know, nasty things, then the next life you get a body of a hog, because for a hog, these are good things. It's healthy for the hog, right? Eating stool is really healthy for the hog, right? For us, not so important, right? Does that make sense? We don't eat stool, we get rid of stool, right? You know, like that. In this way, one has to one is continuously under the influence of material nature. Purushah prakriti stohi bhunkte prakriti jan gunam gunan karanam guna sangosya sad asad yoni janmashu. Living entity in material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of material nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus, he meets with good and evil among various species. Bhagavad Gita 13:20. Due to our association with the modes of material nature, we get different types of bodies, good and bad. One cannot be liberated from the cycle of birth and death, known as transmigration of the soul, unless one is completely free of all sinful activities. The best process, therefore, is to take to Krishna consciousness. One cannot take to Krishna consciousness without being freed from all sinful activities. Right, so the best process for becoming freed is Krishna consciousness. But if one's so attached to all these sinful, one was not interested in Krishna consciousness. Naturally, one who is very serious about Krishna consciousness is freed from all sinful activity. Consequently, a devotee is never inclined to commit sins. If one is pressured by the law or obligations to give up sinful activity, one cannot do so. However, if one takes to Krishna consciousness, he can very easily give up all sinful activity. This is confirmed herein, right? So the devotee is not sinful. So therefore, you know, whatever activities are there within the Vedic system, he doesn't need to follow all the technical points. He just, those points that are supportive of his devotional service, like taking a bath, you know, putting on fresh clothes, like that, you know, being clean and all those things are useful. So he's following those aspects because those are very useful in worshiping the deity, associated with Vaishnavas, preaching, all these things. So he's doing, but it's not because of the person following the Veda. By doing this, he purifies himself. You know, otherwise he's inclined to sin. The devotee's not inclined. Therefore, then there's no difficulty. 2:22-1:43. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. If, however, a devotee accidentally becomes involved in a sinful activity, Krishna purifies him. He doesn't have to undergo the regular form of atonement. The regular form. Srila Prabhupada. Krishna purifies him, purifies from within is the Chaita Guru, the spiritual master within the heart. This is described in the following verse of Srimad Bhagavatam 11:5-42. Verse 2:22, 1:44-1:45. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued. One who has given up everything and taken full shelter at the lotus feet of Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is very dear to Krishna. If he is involved in some sinful activity by accident, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is seated within everyone's heart, removes his sins without difficulty. End quote. The path of speculative knowledge and renunciation is not essential for devotional service. Indeed, good qualities such as nonviolence and control of the mind and senses automatically accompany a devotee of the Lord. So the Lord, even if something comes up, the Lord will take care of that because of that sincere mood to try to do everything very nicely for Krishna. You know, that's why it's considered an offense to think, oh, well, Krishna takes care of it, so it doesn't matter if I'm sinful. No, you know it's wrong and it's bad and there's be a reaction and you don't want to do, but somehow another one gets carried away like that. So that's the whole point. It's within that attitude, that sincerity. So it's not that it's okay, but it's not that it's you know, an act. The disaster is not being absorbed in Krishna service. If you're doing sinful activity, you're not engaged in Krishna service. That's the problem. It's not that sinful activity is the problem. The problem is you're not engaged in devotional service for a devotee, right? For a karmi, then he's performing his pious activity for a mundane benefit, right? That pious activity is dealing with Krishna's energy in a way that's appropriate, as given by Shastra. In other words, as Krishna, you know, has appeared. And so there's rituals with that, mantras with that, you know, qualifications, all these things go. He follows that nicely, he gets that result. But if he doesn't, he commits sin. Now he's dealing improperly with these items. And by dealing improperly with these items of the field of action, then there's a reaction that he must purify himself. So that's why there's prayaschitta for them, because they're following a ritualistic process to get a particular activity. They also have to follow a ritualistic process to make themselves, you know, purify themselves and make themselves serious about, you know, following the rules nicely. But since following the rules, its purpose is to please the Lord, ultimately, therefore, when the devotee works to please the Lord, if there's some mistake, he simply has to go back to trying to please the Lord. This idea that there must be punishment, that we have to set an example and all that, these are all mundane consciousness. Like that. You know, so the whole point is that unless you're very expert, it's just like this. Okay, Nala Kuvara and Mani Griva are sporting about with no clothes on, and Narad Muni comes along, right? And they don't behave properly. They don't cover themselves. They speak badly. They, you know, all these things. What's the punishment they should get? Right? How to punish these people? Okay, definitely they can't lead kirtan, they can't give a class, they can't hold any responsible position within the society. But what did Narad Muni do? He turned them into Jamal Arjun trees, right? Now, why trees? Right? Do trees have clothes? No. Therefore, the reaction to the natural thing of, you know, how you get trees. Trees are all the ones that like to go around with no clothes. Right? And so therefore, that's very fitting, right? According to Shastra. Not according to our ideas, according to Shastra. And not only that, Jamal Arjun trees, right? Because they're demigods, so the demigods are powerful in that. So then naturally they wouldn't just be any old tree. They'd be a big, powerful tree, because Arjuna trees are really, the roots of them are ridiculous. When they get old, these are really old trees. And so they put down buttresses. You know, the tree was like this, but then growing out of the side of the tree, they have these roots that go down in all directions. So you can't pull the trees over. So there are two of these big trees. Then where are they, these trees? In Maharaj Nanda's, you know, courtyard, or out in the back there, you know, wherever it is, that they're, you know, at his house at Nandagam. So then Krishna, a baby by a mortar, pulls over two of these trees. That's impossible. No one can do that. So you're glorifying the Lord by showing his power, that he's just as a baby, he's just pulling along this mortar and his glory. Same time as then they're getting darshan of Krishna. They're getting purified of their birth as a tree. That being a tree, they're getting, is purifying them of their nonsense. So we see is now, here's someone who is competent to do, because the point is you know, this is understood. Brahmins can do these things. But the whole point is if you're not acting as a Brahmin, then if you're a bureaucrat, you have no right to punish. Right? Kshatriya is punished according to the law, and Brahma is punished according to the law. But it's according to the law. The bureaucrats, they're in no position to mete out punishment. Nothing. They're not authorized at all. So then we see is that we end up with a problem, because in actuality, we are saying, no, you have to do, oh, you're just chanting. Oh, that's not enough. You know, we have to have something more serious. It's kind of, is there anything more serious than chanting the holy name? Yeah, but he was chanting, and so we have to do something else. That you're more powerful than the holy name? Your idea is greater than the holy name? So that's the whole point, is that no, devotional service, and Krishna's sitting in the heart. So sitting in the heart, then we shouldn't he can't take care of these things if the devotee's trying. Because the point is you're trying to do everything for Krishna. If anything goes wrong, then Krishna's there to help. You know, so that's the whole point, is that if it did work, one is that then the person would be purified and they wouldn't commit the same mistake. Right? But we see as people go through prayaschitta and they still make the same mistakes. You know, it's just like the example that's given of the elephant. It takes a bath. As soon as it comes out of the water, immediately it picks up dust and throws it all over its body. Right? Especially because it's wet, so that dirt will stick. That's what they do. That they just immediately, if you watch them, they always do that. So then it's like, that's what it said. It's an elephant's bath. And elephants love to take bath. And I've heard Mahouts talk about how, I think it was there that there was an elephant that was on the side of the wall. All the other elephants are in the water. And this elephant, the younger elephant, was up on the side on the bank. And it was looking very unhappy. And all the other elephants are in the water, very happy. So he asked, why is this one on the bank? Why is he not in the water? Oh, because he's the nonsense. Because when he goes in the water, when it's time to go, he won't leave. So therefore, he has to stay outside. You know, so they love taking bath, but then this is their bath. You know, so it's not that we're talking about, you know, a dog's bath or something. They hate baths. So, you know, we're not talking about that. Or a cat's bath, even worse. Right? So, you know, we're not talking about that. We're talking about that one is performing all these activities, but they don't actually purify. They may deal with a reaction. You won't get a reaction by going through the prayaschitta, but they don't actually purify the heart. So only devotional service will do that. That's the real cause of anything. So if anybody's falling down or being distracted or that, it's only because of not being engaged in devotional service properly under the direction of the pure devotees. That's the real point. So then by being engaged like that, we see then the Lord and the devotees, the Lord then arranges, and then one is actually purified. So one has to understand that this is the way of doing it. And even worse then is that, at least in the Vedic society, someone's done the prayaschitta, it's understood he's been purified. And there's a rule that once they've done the prayaschitta, you can't bring it up again. You can't call them, oh, you know, you did this. That's sinful, right? So if we make prayaschittas and aren't accepting that they're not purifying, then what's the point? They're already not a point, but at least people accept that they're of value. But here the prayaschittas are done and people don't accept that there's any purification. So what's the point at all, right? So we see is, therefore, we have to depend upon Krishna. Because Krishna is the one who sets the system, not us. Right? Means prayaschitta is coming from the platform of dharma. Because in dharma, then you have duties to perform. Those are neglected, then there's prayaschittas for that. But if you function below dharma, at sub-dharma, then the rules and regulations that are there anyway are created by man. And then we get upset when they're not followed, and then make a prayaschitta for that. Right? So then how is it going to work? How is it going to purify? It doesn't purify. So therefore, we should have the faith that only devotional service can actually purify anyone from any contamination. There isn't anything else. You may choose a situation in which they can do that service. They may be in a certain situations. There may be a problem, just like you see for training brahmacharis, then they go out of the normal social environment into the ashram. And in the ashram, then they're not in contact with all these social elements. And in this way, they become focused on their devotional service, right? But once they're trained in all that, then as a grihastha, they're able to, in that social environment, continue their devotional service. So like that, you may find that someone has to be adjusted from a certain situation. You know, if he's constantly coming and stealing all the boga, then maybe you have to give him a service where he's not around the boga all the time. Don't make him in charge of the, you know, the walk-in refrigerator and stuff like that, you know, like that. Yeah, so like that, you might put him somewhere else. Put him in the garage with all the car parts, you know, it's hard to eat, you know, those things. So, but the point is it's only devotional service. So stopping devotional service is no prayaschitta at all. So we see here is that Lord Chaitanya is then pointing out that has to be, that's the yes. Okay. Srila Prabhupada. Sometimes a neophyte devotee or ordinary devotee or ordinary person thinks highly of speculative knowledge, austerity, penance, and renunciation, thinking them the only path for advancement in devotional service. Right here, they're thinking that these are what's going to make devotional service go forward. Actually, this is not a fact. They're not the thing that makes it go forward. Let's say you're being very renounced on a festival day, and so therefore you're not eating, you're not doing anything like that. But it's not the renunciation that's making you move forward. It's that you're doing that renunciation to please Krishna. And it's a accepted renunciation, like fasting until midnight on Janmashtami is something given by the acharyas. So therefore you commit yourself to that renunciation because the acharyas have given that direction and you want to please Krishna. That's why you move forward. It's not because you don't eat until midnight. You know, if that was the thing, then so many people would be advancing, right? The guy has the plans when he goes to bed at, you know, 9 a.m. or 12 o'clock, you know, from staying up all night at the partying and all that, that, yeah, he's going to go out and there's this great restaurant he's going to go to at midnight. So he's been fasting until midnight because he's been sleeping the whole day. And then, you know, like that. And then he goes there. But then before he gets there, then he turns into a pure devotee and he's not interested. So he drives off to the temple. Right? Do we hear any stories like that? No? No. Might be an interesting theme, but yeah, it's not. So that's the point is it's because of the intent to do it to please Krishna under authority that's why one's advancing. So it's not that you don't have the process of knowledge, austerity, penance, and renunciation, but it's only what's recommended and with the attitude of only as devotional service. Renunciation, penance, austerity, and speculative knowledge without Krishna don't have any value for the devotee. And they'll move you around in samsara. You know, you go up to heavenly planets, get the liberation, you'll come back around. It's just time. The path of knowledge, mystic yoga, and renunciation has nothing to do with the pure soul. When one is temporarily in the material world, such processes may help a little, but they are not necessary for a pure devotee of Krishna. In the material world, such activities end in material enjoyment or merging into the effulgence of the Supreme. They have nothing to do with the eternal loving service of the Lord. One abandons speculative knowledge and simply engages in devotional service, he has attained his perfection. The devotee has no need for speculative knowledge, pious activity, and mystic yoga. All these are automatically present when one renders the Lord transcendent loving service. Because what's the point of speculative knowledge? To know the absolute. You already know the absolute, right? Pious activity. What is piety for? Piety is simply those activities that in the spiritual world they use as direct interaction for Krishna. That's piety, right? Like Mother Yashoda takes care of her son, but out of devotion. So to take care of your son in the material world is a piety. right? So that's all it is. That's what pious activities are. And mystic yoga, then the whole point is you're just going through all this metaphysical and all these kind of things, but the whole metaphysical thing that's going on in the universe is Krishna's energies. So therefore, if you directly approach Krishna, you don't need these mystic elements. Because they're just there to bring you to the point to be fully absorbed in meditation on the super soul. How many yoga studios are teaching that? Right. Yeah, they just have some music. Close your eyes.
Not so many.
Not so many. Yes. Not so many. Yes. Yes. Not so many. So that's the point. If you're engaged in devotional service, all the good qualities naturally follow. Right. And if it says that the bad qualities are remaining, then there's some weakness in the devotional service. That's what needs to be corrected. Not, oh, this is bad, throw everything out. No, it's that by engaging in service, by being aware of what's going on, then one moves forward. 222-146. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continued, "For one who is fully engaged in my devotional service, whose mind is fixed on me in bhakti yoga, the path of speculative knowledge and dry renunciation is not very beneficial." Srila Prabhupada, "The path of devotional service is always independent of other activity. The path of speculative knowledge and mystic yoga may be a little beneficial in the beginning, but it cannot be considered part of devotional service." Well, you know, you see people from the yoga studio, they may be interested, but at the same time, they're much of the time more interested in yoga. Like that. You know, you run the yoga studio just to bring people in and kind of bring them around to Krishna and all that. Let's say they do get faith in Krishna and take up the process. But you come back after a few years, they're still going to yoga retreats and this and that. And, you know, does that make sense? They're going to yoga retreats put on by devotees that do yoga retreats to make people devotees. But they're all devotees. Why not just have a kirtan? So they might maintain these attachments for the yoga, the speculation, and all these things. That's the weakness of putting so much emphasis. That's why in the beginning, it may raise the consciousness of something more. But once you come in contact with pure devotional service, it's not a great advantage. So all these new age things and this and that, for a karmi, then there's a possibility they may be more open to hearing about God consciousness. But at the same time, depending upon their motive, if it's just for health or this or that, they may be not interested at all. Just have a little bit more, subtle appreciation. So in the beginning, it may have some advantage, but once one starts to pass seriously, it's not actually required. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Can we say that when the intent and the activity are connected with pure devotional service, automatically we can understand that what Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, its logic is simple and it's direct. Yeah? But when the intent is not on pure devotional service, we try to have some other thing.
Of course, because the soul has those three features. They're conscious, they have knowledge, and there's an interest in happiness.
Yes.
Right? But problem is when you deal with mundane happiness, there's always distress.
Yes.
When you're dealing with transcendental bliss, there's no distress. Mm-hmm. Like that. So in that case, then Krishna is the center of all relationships. Then, you know, Abhideya means activities in connection with serving Krishna. And Prayojana means developing love for Krishna. Right? Yes. You know, that's the whole idea. So then there's no difficulty there. So but if you aren't absorbing your mind like that, seeing that we are Satchitananda, you are going to look for situations, you know, the knowledge of those situations, the elements within those situations that you feel will better whatever is your particular you know, distraction. You're going to perform the activities connected with that distraction. You're going to try to get the results and experience of that distraction. It's like you said, it's automatic. So one may have habits from before that one's doing, but the consciousness is on Krishna. Just like, let's say, someone who's new to Krishna, just bumped into the devotees, went to a program or something, talked with the devotee, one of those ones that, he comes, he sits and talks for hours, and he's impressed, he starts to chant, you teach him how to offer his prasad, he goes home, he does that. In his mind, he's really engaged in devotional service. Because his mind, that's all he thinks about is, wow, I went to the temple and there was this and that, it was so nice. And he may chant a couple of rounds and, he'll at some point in the day when he decides to eat something, he'll offer that. But, it's just kind of like, but in his mind, he's really engaged. But even though in volume, it's not necessarily so much, but in consciousness, it is. Right, so that's the whole thing is we're trying to, that it's about Krishna. And so even if one is engaged in activities from previous that aren't may not be so important, connecting to Krishna, one will get purified. Then those aspects of what you're doing that are useful, those can remain, and those aspects that aren't useful, those can be given up. Does that make sense? So we find that in, let's say, like driving the car, and going to the temple, and going to your work and all that. Okay. So that part of driving is useful. But the part of driving, where you go out and try to impress friends with your fancy car and hang out and, cut profile, leaning on the car and, doing all that stuff, all that kind of, that aspect can be given up. But in the beginning, you might be still engaged in those things, but with time, you get purified, and then you see that's not important. So whatever is useful, that remains. And whatever is not, is dropped. If something's recommended, then naturally you would do. But if it's not recommended and you're doing it out of attachment, as you become purified, it can be dropped. Does that make sense? And those aspects that are useful for supporting the devotional service you're doing, then those things can remain. Because it's not that it's impersonal, that it just becomes a nothingness. It's a matter of it's going to be whatever works for your particular situation. Like that. But there must be that mood that you're trying to do things very nicely.
Yes.
Yeah.
And by enthusiasm, we can purify quicker.
Yes, we can advance quicker. Because that enthusiasm, because that's why Lord Rupa Goswami says, Utsahan.
Yes.
Nishraya Darya. And Prabhupada says that is endeavor with intelligence. Yes. That you're at all times saying, okay, this is better for Krishna, this is not, so I do this, I don't do that. That's an actual enthusiasm. Rather than the enthusiasm that just comes from simply some emotional reaction.
Yes, yes.
Right? That may come along also due to something, some very nice situation. And so then, that's why festivals, you decorate nicely, you make some more grand arrangements. You make nicer prasad, people are inspired. Like you see, if the prasad is nice, sometimes the only time you ever see certain people coming to programs is at prasad time.
Yes.
Have the whole big program, this and that. 30 devotees are there, but at prasad, hundreds come. But at least they're taking prasad. So they have that enthusiasm for Krishna in the form of prasadam. Though they may not be so enthusiastic for Krishna as, a Bhagavatam class. like that. And so they come for that. So they're doing some service. So that's why then you make these special arrangements, because people get involved. They get inspired. They know, okay, this devotee cooks and they're going to cook these nice things. But if you get to the point where everything's just, it's all about health and all this and that, looking at it and by Western standards and that, and then you just make it where, and nobody knows how to cook and everything, then you even lose that aspect.
Yes.
Yes. You know, because, you know, you can make a better salad at home.
Yes.
No? You know, I can put on it the avocado oil. You know, they're not putting avocado. You know, it's like, you know, hey, why should I go to there and eat their salad? You know, my salad's better. But you can cook nicely. So that's why then one has to be very, very careful to see that what's actually making it work. Right? You know, it's just like, we'll take it. Oh, if I eat all these things, I'll be healthy. But actually, it's if you're regulated, you'll be healthy. You're regulated in when you eat, what you eat, and how much you eat. That will make you healthy. Right? That's the point. Now there's recommendations of things that you should eat, you know, and so if you do like that, then they make it gets even better. But the point is regulation in what you're eating, how much you're eating, and when you're eating it, that will make your health, even if it's not necessarily something you would call healthy.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So that's the interesting thing. Is that that's what's going to make things work very nicely. Then if now you understand and you follow recommendations, then it becomes even better. But people don't even know what's the essential point that makes it work. You know, that's the whole point, is that they don't even know. They just look at some, what are the statistics of, you know, you eat this particular, you know, this berry or this seed, and then, you know, it's a superfood. And then, yes, you hear about that for some weeks, some months, and then you don't hear about it anymore. Is anybody talking about quinoa?
No.
You know, so, I mean, what happened to quinoa? You know, so that's the whole thing. It just moves on because it's speculative. But at the same time, as people in Peru have been eating quinoa for the last thousands of years. So, hey, you know, they're doing fine.
Yes. Khichdi remains the king of foods.
Khichdi.
Khichdi. Forever.
Yeah. And yes, it's in traditional Bengali, you know, the feast, the khichdi is always one of the preparations. So when you're having a feast, it will always be there as one of the preparations. You don't see it so much practiced anymore. There used to be that even you're having these big feasts with a wide variety, khichdi is generally part of it. Or you can just have khichdi with all the things that go with khichdi, and it's a feast in itself. If you have nothing else, then just the khichdi. So it just goes from there. You have the khichdi, it's good. You have the khichdi and some yogurt, then it gets better. You have khichdi yogurt, and then all the different other fries and different things that go with it, then it gets even better. And then, you know, and then you have some nice company, and it becomes even better again. You know, you put some ghee on the top, it becomes even more better. Like that, you know, just like this. It's like you said, it just gets better and better. And with that, and I think it's one of Lord Chaitanya's favorites. So with that, we'll end for today. And it's also might be time to be making your arrangements for your evening meals. So, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.